right, y'all. Get ready for another edition of News and Trends with your host, Dave and Lynn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to News and Trends with Dave and Lynn. I am one of your hosts, Mr. David Coker, promoter, event planner, man about town, one of the goodest guys you ever meet. And, you know, just hanging out here with my partner, Mr. Leonard Young. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Dave, everything is good. This is Leonard Young, CEO of DelawareBlack.com, National Black Guide, Black media specialist, and all around good guy. How's it going, Dave?
Man, I can't call it. You know, it's, you know, here we are, another week, you know, at the beginning of another week. And man, why you keep bringing rain though, man? I don't understand that. Why you keep bringing the rain?
I don't know. I do not know. I want to say I feel like in the last 6 weeks, it has rained more than about 75, you know, at least some drops every day, you know, three out of every 4 days. So I'm guessing we'll have a great summer. Hopefully it's not super humid.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. I mean, you know, because it's supposed to be cloudy basically all week from what they said, you know.
Yeah, I know it's supposed to rain all day tomorrow, Thursday morning, Friday supposed to be okay, Saturday rain. So, I guess we're getting April showers and May showers. So
there you go. Well, we got to get all the rain out of the way because, you know, we can't have it raining that weekend coming up on June 8th, right?
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah. So yeah. Now for those of you guys that are under a rock or whatever the case may be, Leonard, why don't you tell them? So this is your place that we're talking about.
Okay. Well, Dave, you're such a great spokesman.
Okay. All right. You want me to tell him? Okay. Anyway. All right.
Well, no. So, I mean, don't worry. I'll
go ahead.
Yeah, because I just want to make sure you have your information right. So last year, my wife and I bought a campground in Delaware, Lower Delaware, and it continues to be the oldest Black-owned campground and RV park in the United States. It was founded in the mid-1990s. And the prior owner, Norman Dempster, pretty much built the campground from the ground up. And most people will be familiar with the location of the Gun and Rod Club, which is sits on the campground. So this is a GNR campground, stands for Gun and Rod, and it's on Gun and Rod Road in Houston, Delaware. Houston, if you look at it, it looks like Houston, but it's actually Houston. And it is around where Harrington, Delaware is. So June 8th, Sam B. Entertainment, Wilmington Gentlemen of Distinction, led by Sam Bailey, is having a Black Music Fest Delaware. So if you put Black Music Fest Delaware into Google, you can get all the information. I think it's $40 per person, no tickets sold at the door, BYOB, BYOF, bring your tents, lawn chairs, enjoy some good music.
Right. And you get to hear what Best Kept Soul will be performing. Going to have DJs from the area, from downstate, upstate, our very own DJ Tim Dog will also be participating as well. They're going to have food trucks, all, you know, so it's just going to be a good time. So for anyone who's listening or who hadn't heard yet, this is a good chance to, you know, have a day that, you know, at a place that's for us, owned by us.
Right.
You know,
yeah. Catering to us.
There you go. I mean, you know, we don't get that too often and this is a great opportunity to come down and check something unique, fun, and is hopefully an annual event there every year. So
yeah, definitely. Hopefully.
So we hope to see you guys down there. And, you know, for those of you that know Sam Bailey, you can go to any of his pages and Facebook, you know, Instagram, whatever, and you'll be able to find the tickets and everything, or you know, and his information to get in touch with him. Okay, so all right, so you know, we got one Black cultural event out the way. So today we have, because we want to go in and get into this right quick, you know.
We
So
do.
today we have a very, very unique and wonderful guest with us today, and I can, you know, I'm kind of giddy over here because I've known her just about all my life. So you know,
Well, hold on, Dave. How
yeah.
long has that been?
Well, she, wait, hold on. I can say that she's older than me, so let me say
Okay.
that. You know, so, but anyway, why don't you introduce who we have on today? So, go ahead.
Sure. Today our guest is Velda Jones Potter, and she has a history of first in science, business, and government in Delaware, the first state. In 2017, she was inaugurated as Wilmington City Treasurer, and she was the first woman and first African American to ever hold that office. In this position, Velda secured over $20 million in savings for Wilmington taxpayers and was a strong voice for fair housing, education, training, jobs, and economic opportunity for all people. In 2009, Velda became the first African American in Delaware history to hold statewide elective office when appointed state treasurer by then Governor Jack Markell. As state treasurer, she steered Delaware through its worst financial crisis since the Great Depression and is lauded for nationally recognized financial education and empowerment initiatives launched during her tenure. Prior to serving as Delaware's CFO, Velda founded a financial services and consulting company and was managing partner with a social impact venture capital firm that invested in women and minority-led technology companies and increased access to capital for underrepresented groups. She began her professional career as an engineer and previously held executive positions with DuPont, MBNA, which is now Bank of, and MBNA, which is now Bank of America. Today, Velda is a candidate for mayor of Wilmington and poised to make history once again as the first woman to lead Delaware's largest city. So without further ado, Velda, I would like to welcome you to News and Trends with Dave and Lynn.
Hello, thank you so much. I'm
Yep.
excited to be here.
Good,
Yeah.
good. Thank you for coming on with us. So I do also want to mention, because I think this is a phenomenal accomplishment. So part of the bio, Velda earned a BS of Civil Engineering from the University of Delaware, becoming the first African woman in the history of the institution to earn an engineering degree. So I just want to say I was an engineering major at the number one HBCU in the nation, Florida A&M University. And when I say I struggled through mechanical engineering, you know, and you know, it's funny because everybody at our school engineering, they were always at the engineering school, you know, they were just always doing stuff. So I recognize what an accomplishment it is because I always, and Velda, maybe you're the same. We were working on problems that were so long, you couldn't explain it to anybody outside of engineering. Did you kind of have the same situation where, like, you know, you can't go home and it's not like you're a teacher and you talk about the students, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, in some ways, it was almost like, okay, you're kind of living in a different world because as you say, the problems were just so lengthy. They had a lot of components to them, and just nobody at home was going to hang in there long enough
Yeah, no, they weren't.
to follow through with me.
Well, I always say they wouldn't understand and they definitely don't care. You know, it's
Right.
just one of those things. But again, we do want to welcome you to the show, and I'm just gonna jump right into it. So first, you know, I want to congratulate you on your candidacy for mayor of Wilmington. Because I think Wilmington is a great city, and you know, I think it has a lot of potential. What, and you know, of course, the current mayor is not running again. What are some of your ideas to, you know, bring to the city or changes that you think would be beneficial to, and I'm just going to say most residents, because, you know, you can't please everybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what are some things that people could look forward to you implementing as mayor?
Okay. Yeah, great. Thank you. First of all, both of you for having me on. I'm just really ecstatic to be here. I agree with you. Wilmington has tremendous potential. You know, we're more like a small town than a city. And there's so much charm here. The individual neighborhoods, I think, are just the hidden gems of this city. They each have their own unique, I don't know, not culture, but character.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has a way of offering to the city its history, its contribution to what really has in the past, and I believe can in the future, make
Right.
Wilmington a real vibrant, very special place to live and work and play. And what I'm looking forward to doing are, first and foremost, addressing some of the things that have been challenging for the city. I like to kind of present those in three pieces, a safe, a smart, and an empowered city is what I'm hoping to set us on a good path for. And in some cases, get us there in
Right.
short order. And the safe piece is really, I think, more about addressing some of the underlying root cause issues that people are struggling with here that are leading to the crime within our city. Not just focusing on the back end policing, but it, you know, starting with honestly some of the social elements of the city. We have a huge homeless population. The affordability of housing has really become a problem here in the city. And we have a lot of people who've been through the criminal justice system and are trying to find their way back. And we're not offering enough assistance and services to people. So we're paying the price for that on the back end instead
Right.
of helping that process along more on the front end. I believe clean neighborhoods is like basic and fundamental. So one example of something that I'm looking forward to doing is bringing to our neighborhoods, particularly those that need it most, clean and safe teams. We have a downtown visions in our downtown, very visible, very helpful to people who are just downtown and trying to get around. They're available to walk you to your car at night if you... You know, if you feel a little bit uncomfortable about that. I think if we had those, that kind of presence in some of the communities that are having the most challenges, that would go a long way to work, you know, reviving those neighborhoods. We've got to do a better job of making jobs available to local people. There's been a lot of construction and building and real estate development in the last 8-10 years. And even with that, the participation has not been equitable in terms of just giving people access. People who have small contractors, they have you know, small construction companies, and they just have not been given equal opportunity to work on these projects. We've got to give some apprenticeship training that can lead people into that and support those small businesses. And then we've got a real education challenge here in this city, in the state, honestly, but even worse in the city, where our third graders are not performing. Just as an example, our third graders on the testing are performing really at a 5% level.
Oh, wow.
At grade level when it comes to reading.
Now when you say 5%, can you kind of break that down? I mean, like it sounds low, but I'm not exactly sure what it means.
Well, probably what you're thinking it means is exactly what it
Oh,
means.
wow.
If the study has shown that an assessment of all of the third graders across our state who are reading at grade level, at third grade level, across the state is 42%. Within our city, it's 5%.
Wow.
It's unacceptable. And so, you know, we wonder what, well, we shouldn't wonder what's going to happen 6, 7, 8 years from that point with our third graders. We know what that inability to do a basic reading leads to. So we've got to really demand the state that is whose jurisdiction that falls under, that be addressed on behalf of the children of this city. And then the last piece is empowered. And that's one that, you know, not a lot of people, you know, who are stepping forward to be in public service is going to tout and encourage people around. But I am, because I believe that's the key to us breaking this cycle of decline within our city, is empowering those people who live here,
right,
to reengage in the process of how we're governed. And how holding our leaders accountable and speaking up for what's needed in the community and all across the city. So so those are the things that I'm really focusing on as I, you know, plan and look ahead to being mayor of the city.
You know, it's funny, one of the things that you mentioned was the more opportunities for apprenticeship. And last week, I went to the United Way had like a minority business event where there were a lot of vendors. There were some government and I guess large company that were looking to hire, you know, supplier diversity, and there was a construction company there, you know, a larger one, a named one that we're familiar with. And they said that they have trouble finding good workers to tradespeople to work on their projects. They said, so, you know, it's just funny that you mentioned apprenticeship, because I mean, I definitely would be, you know, I think it would be good if people knew that, and unfortunately I didn't even learn till late, but electricians make a lot of money. Plumbers make a lot of money. Carpenters make a lot, you know, these trades. And I don't know where we came up with the notions that these were not, you know, low paying jobs, minimum wage, but they are making a lot of money. So, I mean, I definitely think that would be, you know, something great for the city of Wilmington. I guess the question is how do we make that happen? Because so I know, of course, if they go to the tech schools, the Votech schools, you know, they kind of have an option. Do you see trying to implement some programs that may, and I guess I was kind of thinking about, you know, a lot of these youth who are looking for summer jobs, you know, how can they be, you know, even if it's like a junior apprentice to somebody who is, you know, just to kind of get them familiar with doing it. Cause I mean, I think that's a real skill.
Yeah. Absolutely. We've got to introduce those trades as options for young people early.
Right.
So that it's not considered, you know, going to college and that academic route is the only option. And it isn't, and it shouldn't be. And so we've got to introduce young people to it really early. We used to have wood shop and
Yep, we did.
all of that
I
in
had
the
it. Yep.
schools. And so, you got to see and experience some of that, like right in high school. And frankly, I would love to see that come back.
Right.
And but until that itself happens, then yes, programs that we can bring into the elementary schools, it just introducing the notion and the idea of trade so that it's on the minds of young people. And certainly some of the after school and summer experiences need to move beyond office work, which is
Right.
typically what people are brought into, and need to connect them up with people who are part of the skilled trades. I also believe we need to hold up and show them the kind of wages that they earn.
Yeah, definitely.
That
Right.
was one of the things that I did with the financial literacy program that I ran and introduced young people to, was we connected it with the kinds of work and jobs and careers that they might choose, and help them see the connection between investing in themselves to
Right.
learn that skill, to, if it's college, to go to college. Whatever that career choice is, they're investing in that and the return that they're going to get in terms of how much they would earn, how that translates into what they can afford in terms of an apartment or a house and a car, all the things that they want, but they need help seeing how to get there.
Right.
And I absolutely know that people don't know how well electricians and plumbers and carpenters,
Yeah.
how well they're paid, and frankly, always in demand.
Well, it's funny. Anytime I talk to Dave, I'm like, Dave, do you know a, 'cause Dave knows just about everyone, just about everybody. I'm like, Dave, you know a plumber? Do you know electrician? Because if you just call one of those tradesmen out the, well, I was about to say the phone book, but if you call one of those tradesmen, just, offer online $50 an hour, $75 an hour, $200 minimum. I mean, they definitely get their money. So, I mean, I definitely, and if I was in another life, I may be some type of trades person as well. You just never know. Now, I guess my next question. So, and to be honest, I'm not as familiar with the Wilmington politics as I feel like I used to be. But, of course, we always hear about, Wilmington dumping a lot of money into the downtown, then into the riverfront. I feel like what I've seen lately, kind of that, North Market Street corridor. Are there any areas of town that maybe are on your radar to, and I won't say fast track, but are there any areas of town that you're thinking, okay, this is an area that if we kind of put some more money, some more development, renovation, that this could be, another, I guess, we talked about pockets of the city that almost like Trolley Square, like that's an area people love to go to. Do you have any thoughts of any of those locations?
Yeah, well, certainly those areas where we're seeing high crime rates are places that need some tender loving care. And so we're seeing a fair amount on the sort of the east northeast side of our city and on the west side of our city. And so I definitely envision a real focus on those areas. I believe we also have an opportunity to create a very strong arts and culture economy here. You know that you know, and both of you do very well how rich the history on the east side of our city is in music. And I don't think, well, not just music, law, education. I mean, we have some stellar people who came before us, who
We do.
lived in that community. And I believe there's an opportunity for us to really, there's some investment going on there, but to really revive the arts and cultural aspects. I mean, I envision walking tours where
Yes.
you
Oh,
know,
that'd be
you can
awesome.
walk and you
Be
can
awesome.
listen. Yeah, and so and I know likewise the West Side, we have a very large Hispanic population there, and they and that community celebrates its heritage
They do.
in some really great ways. I'd love to see that evolve into something that's just rich with heritage right there on the west side of the city, that you know you can see it by the buildings that are there and the and all of that. So those are a couple of areas that I really see opportunities. The Market Street corridor, that business corridor along Market Street from the Brandywine up to like 30th, 30th, 31st and Market. I really believe when we nurture the small businesses there and we revive that area, imagine what that's going to do on both sides of Market Street. It's going to begin to bring life back to the residential areas on either side of Market Street. So those are things that I'm excited about doing.
Good. And you know, it's funny because you mentioned, and that was going to be my next question, talking about the arts and culture. Because, you know, I always hear people talk, man. Well, first of all, you know, I think we all know there are many talented people in the arts scene here in Wilmington, of course, the state of Delaware as well. And I won't say I don't feel like they get enough credit, but I feel like they don't have enough opportunities to kind of represent themselves. And you know, maybe part of it is how schools are just starting to kind of cut out, you know, art and you know, those type of disciplines. But and I'm going to say this, and maybe I'm speaking for Dave too, but you know, I think Wilmington has some great festivals. How you know, of course, Clifford Brown Music Festival, I mean, that, you know, that's a no-brainer. But then they also have some other great festivals that kind of feature, you know, local artists. And you know, what are you excited about, you know, kind of maybe bringing more art and culture to the city?
Absolutely. You know, personally, I love music. I just love music.
Yeah, she was out
So,
partying all weekend, Leonard. Let me just tell you
yeah.
that.
I don't understand how people can hear music almost any kind and like just sit there. Not, you know, that rhythm just gets in you and you just want to move. So personally, I love it on the one hand. But then I just I know so many people, young people and people who've been at it for a while, all across the spectrum, who are talented, and we as a city, certainly maybe a tad better as a state, but I don't know that to be the case either, but certainly as a city, we've not opened the door for that here. And I'm not sure why not, other than the leaders who've been in place have just made placed obstacles in the way. Placed obstacles in the way. And I just believe it's time to pull those away, to let this potential we have in the arts and in music and in culture, let that organically do what it does. And I think if we had done that some years ago, I honestly believe we here would already be a destination point for arts and culture in the region. Because look at where we're located. I mean, we always tout where Delaware is located, 2 hours from New York, less than an hour from Philadelphia. You got DC to the south of us, Maryland. I mean, we are in such a central place that there'd be no barrier to people coming here for our festivals and other entertainment, that if we organically allow it to do what it does, I just believe we'll see the benefits all
Yeah,
throughout the state.
I definitely agree. One, and I've heard it a lot, and then I heard it recently as well. A lot of artists are saying that venues in Delaware make it hard for them to, do shows or have live events or, kind of like, to be honest, just like we said, there are a lot of gatekeeping. So then it's kind of like, okay, well, if they're not able to perform in their home city, which they want to, then they're forced to go to Philadelphia, Jersey, New York, DC, Baltimore.
I was gonna say that and what happens is what you just said. Our people who have these talents are forced to go elsewhere. I mean, I've seen it and experienced it close. Up close and personal, I'll say. And we don't want that.
No,
We
we
want
don't
that
want
talent to stay
it.
here, and we want the economy to be built around that right here. And we are long overdue for it. We were poised for it years back, but the gatekeeping and the hurdles prevented it. And I think I know we have another shot at it now. And it's really something that I'm committed to nurture and
Understood.
to really help make sure the city policies and practices and procedures, permitting and all the stuff the government does that, puts up roadblocks, are reviewed and transformed so that we're enabling it instead of making it more difficult. And I certainly intend to be an advocate with the venues that need to accommodate and welcome. So I intend as mayor to be an advocate with them.
Well, I definitely heard the name of some of those venues, so I'm gonna write them down on a piece of paper and hold
Okay.
on and hold on to them. All right,
Good.
so I know that, and one of the, I was also gonna ask about kind of like the violence and the crime, but I'm gonna save that for either Dave or for the one of the stories we may be talking about. But my last question, and I'm actually gonna bundle three things into this question. So one, and to be honest, being mayor of Wilmington sounds like a great thing, but I'm sure it comes with pressure, stress. Like, I'm just trying to think, how do I wake up every day and see my name in the news, see my name in the newspaper, or, somebody did this or somebody saying that. So, I guess how do you handle that pressure? And a lot of times, like, I always think when I sign up for a big project, 5 minutes before the project or a presentation, I'd be like, man, why did I sign up for this? Like, why did I put myself in this undue pressure that I didn't, I could have just sat back. But, what is it, I guess, in you that, just to, I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know if it's just, like purpose driven, mission, but kind of like how do you handle that stress? And then my second part of that is, and how do you, and I'll kind of compare it to Obama, where, of course you are an African American woman, and sometimes people may think, okay, she's the black mayor, she's not doing this for black people, but of course you are the mayor of the city of Wilmington, which happens to be predominantly black, but you're the mayor for everybody. So, how do you handle that additional pressure? So I'll kind of leave that however you want to.
Okay. Well, to that first one, oof. It's a lot to step into public service and in any public role. So, and a city that has the kind of challenges that we have can be especially challenging. So sometimes I wonder, okay, did I bump my head here or what? But it is really purpose driven, I have to honestly say, because I never envisioned myself here. I didn't. I'm an engineer, I'm a finance person. And but a former mayor, Jim Sills, while I was still in the private sector at DuPont, career going very well, reached out to me and asked if I would come and help kind of get things on track with the finances for the city. And the city had had like 4 straight years of deficits and just wasn't in a good place. I wasn't looking for a career change, but I knew what this city had done, and the people of this city, the village of Riverside and East Lawn, and the places where I grew up, what it and the schools did for me. So I really felt a responsibility to do what I could. And so DuPont loaned me. I went on a loaned executive kind of arrangement. I could be work with the city for like 18 months. And that was a life-changing experience for me. We were successful in turning the corner. The city, by the end of the 18 months that I was there, ended up with a $1.5 million surplus. Police officers were able to be hired. Contracts with union workers and city employees were able to be filled. So people were able in feeding their family and doing all those things that that allows to do. So that was the change in me that I saw how much you could make a difference if you, one, care about people and want to see others do better and lift them up. And if you're prepared to bring, some experience, best practices, just good work to it. And so that then set me on this path. And I've had some tough times in here with, like you say, your name in the newspaper and all sorts of things. And I believe that's all been preparing me and readying me for this. And, like I said, I never expected to be doing it, but for me, it's an assignment. It's a purpose-driven assignment for now. And that's that urgency of this window of time that we have to really kind of, much like that 18 months, to turn that corner. It's this time now for us to turn the corner around so many things that are have gotten off track. And I don't I'm not a savior or anything like that, but a catalyst and a vehicle, I think, to help bring all people of this city together. Because you're right, I'll be a mayor for this entire city, but I also come with a somewhat with a very unique background from any other leaders who've led this city in my upbringing, in my background, in my the shared experience that I have with some of the people who are experiencing the most challenge. So I believe being able to kind of to know and understand the spectrum of perspectives of people mm-hmm. all across the city, I believe is going to be helpful.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I get to ask some questions now. Are you done, sir?
Hold on. I got one more.
Okay. Anyway. All right.
Yep. And this can just be a yes, no question. After becoming the first African-American and female, mayor of the city of Wilmington, would you have any plans to go any higher? You can just say yes or no.
No.
All right, Dave, I'm done now. It's all you.
Well, Leonard, there's a lot of good questions and so forth, but I just have a few. I'm not going to, I'm sure we can get into some other things with some of the other things we're going to talk about. But I was just listening to what you were just saying, and I've been fortunate enough to have a bird's eye view to your career. And knowing everything that you've accomplished and knowing the things that you've done, this challenge of being able to come and be the leader of Wilmington, I know that's gotta have, it comes with big implications as far as that's concerned. We're looking at Philadelphia, what's going on with Mayor Sherrell Parker up there. And I remember when she got elected, the first thing that came out of her mouth, you remember this, Leonard? Delaware, I got my eye on you. You're next. You remember that, Velda?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So that rang out. It was a big statement. And it really made a lot of sense because we know, even though Philadelphia is a lot bigger than Wilmington is, but we know Philadelphia and Wilmington always had their parallels and so forth. And normally what's going on up there, we kind of paid attention to down here. So when that happened up there, what did you think to yourself? Tell me what you were thinking.
I was like, wow. I mean, wow. I watched Mayor Sherrell Parker, through the campaign. And I really saw her really get her stride down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And she was so authentic. That was what was so
that's
striking.
The key. She is authentic. That's what I like about it.
Yeah. So authentic. And she so far has been true to what she said she was going to do. Mm-hmm. And that aspect of her is very much like me. And I think that's right. Why I've said, wow. And because we don't typically have that among people who are moving into, I'll say for other people, political roles. For me, it's a service. Right. But typically people in those roles are, more counting the votes from the standpoint of what do I need to say to get elected, as opposed to what do I really believe? And what do I really intend to do? And if that's what people believe is needed and they want in their leader, then they will vote for me. It's just a different way of looking at it as opposed to, like vote seeking, and therefore I'll shade and I'll shift what I say for that purpose. It's about what do I really believe? What am I really in truth? And transparency, intending to deliver and do. And that's what I'm saying. And that's what she did. And that's what was so refreshing and so far to me amazing, because she's been out there. She was in Kensington doing like a cleanup in
Right. I know. I
Kensington.
saw that. I saw that because that's one of the roughest areas up there.
Yes. And she went there and she said on the front end that she was going to be doing that. So, I'm very inspired by what I saw in her and what I am seeing still. I have been in communication with her. And honestly, I am looking forward to what I think also we have not done enough of, and that's collaborating along this coast.
I agree with that one.
That's
Collaborating
true.
along this coast. We got this beautiful waterway here. We got the railway that runs like straight up from here to and through Philadelphia. As you noted, David, we are a sister city in that we're like, the smaller
Right.
sister. And so
The smaller version of Philadelphia, really.
and we take our lead, but we haven't like partnered and collaborated in the way that I'm honestly looking forward to. So between Wilmington, Chester, Philadelphia, I think we have a golden opportunity to really, and I'm talking about things that can stimulate growth and an economy because we have assets that
Right.
I really believe will allow us to do that.
All right. Okay. I want to go back to something you kind of touched on. You were talking about the schooling and the third grade reading and third grade levels, and I think back to back during the 70s when they decided to, close a lot of our schools. This always hits home with me when I think about it, and because they thought that busing the inner city students out to other schools would help with the reading problems and the imbalance as far as the education was concerned and so forth and so forth. And they managed to close all the city high schools. Matter of fact, we still don't have a city high school that, I mean, I think they've said for years we're probably the only state that doesn't have a inner city high school. And it's really a shame that that happened. But they said this was supposed to be all for the good. Well, I haven't seen anything happen that really has said this has been a successful venture into creating the type of education system that we were supposed to have when this was thought up. What do you think about all that's happened since that happened?
I believe it's the worst thing that could have happened to our
Okay.
children and to our neighborhoods. I believe when we lost our local learning institutions, we lost such a, I mean, we lost so much. We lost a sense of community
Right.
because children are going here and there and everywhere. They lost the opportunity to like learn in the environment where they live. So
Right.
a culturally familiar learning environment. They lost that. People coming out of the neighborhood, parents, ex-teachers, people who are retired, coming into the school because it's four blocks away and they can walk there to help with extracurricular activities and programs that are going on in the school. All of that helped make community when and a real nurturing kind of learning environment when schools were right there in our neighborhoods. I mean, not to mention just the practicality of parents or grandparents, which is the case in many situations, being accessible to their kids. When the bus is taking them like 40 minutes away, and the parents, if they were kind of near home, they could run out, you know, they could take their lunch hour late and use that time to go to the school and see their kid and, you know, do their musical or whatever. They don't have that ability to do. And
no.
And putting the kids on the buses for all the hours that they're there, it's just, to me, it's just all added up to where we are today. And that has to be fixed. It has to be fixed.
Right.
And it has to be fixed quickly, because we're just losing young people. We know what happens after the third grade. That's when kids get, and I'm not, the one thing I don't know a lot about is, you know, the profession of how you educate. But as a parent, I know that that after like the third grade is about the time when kids really start to be aware of where they fit into the social setting. And if they can't read and if they can't do math, they will begin to be very self-conscious. They lose their self-esteem. They don't want to socialize and be a part of it because they don't want other kids to know that. All of these dynamics start. And then it's just, in most cases, a downward spiral from there. So, you know, what I would rather have seen happen was the funding model for education had been, I'd rather had seen that model modified. Because, you know, some of the premise was in the neighborhood, since the funding to schools were largely based on the property tax structure. So where the value of the homes were lower, the taxes that were available to fund those schools were not as much, right?
Right.
But in many cases, that's where the need is the greatest, right? So why didn't we have enough, why didn't the leaders at the time have enough concern to revamp the funding model and to recognize that these are all our children. And so let's take care of all of them according to their needs. And let's have a funding model that gets the funds to where it's needed most. But instead of doing that, you know, they just closed the schools down in so many of the inner city, certainly the inner city neighborhoods, including the high school.
Right.
And all that you get from having a high school in your neighborhood, in your community,
right?
The sense of identity. And particularly in this small town, you know, people here, it's like, where'd you go to high school? Oh, I went to Howard. Oh, I went to Dillawar at the time. Oh, I went to, now it's, I went to St. Mark's. But that was a lot of how we, you know, our identity and our pride. And so I'm heartbroken by where we are today. And local control, schools back in the community where children can learn in a culturally familiar environment, and resourced properly. That's what we need. I was talking to someone earlier today. She was showing her little granddaughter's picture to me. She was dancing and singing the tones and the songs and all. And in cultures where music is so central, that's a lot of how the kids learn.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And I keep telling everybody about Jules TV. I have a granddaughter now who's will soon be 2 years old. So she's turned me on to to Jules TV and Toonies and I mean, you name it. But the music is culturally familiar. You
Yeah,
know, it's got the hip hop beat to it.
right,
But I'm
yeah.
telling you, she knows her numbers to like 40. She knows all of her alphabet. She's learning things that are morally good, like I tell the truth, I tell the truth, I always tell
Right.
the truth. That's
Right.
one show in particular. All that good stuff is being learned in a familiar kind of comfortable, culturally comfortable way. And I think when schools are in the communities, you have a better chance of being able to do that well with children.
Right.
But
I
yeah,
think,
I
and I
plan to
think
have a
that,
strong voice on this as
yeah.
mayor, because
Well,
even though
and
the
that's
state is responsible, they are our children.
right. And that's why I wanted to bring that question up, because I was hoping you'd say that, because it is very important. I know I wouldn't trade my education for anything. I mean, look, and I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. I wouldn't trade any of the schools I went to, the teachers that I had. It
Yep.
was just a wonderful, wonderful experience coming
Yes.
up and being able to go through the system the way I did. I was in a store the other day, and I was going through right? So he says to me, he says, "Oh man," he said, "P.S. DuPont," he said, "I love that school." He said, "I went there for middle school." And he said, "Did you go there for middle school too?" I said, he said, "Because you look kind of old." And I started laughing. I said, "Well, it wasn't always a middle school, right?" And he said, "Yeah, that's right. It was a high school." He said, "You went there to the high school?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And I said, "Matter of fact, I just so happened to be in the very last class that graduated from there." And he said, "Wow." He was just so, he said, "Man," he said, "let me tell you, that was the best school." And he said, "You know what I was always impressed about that school?" He said, "They kept that school clean. It's one of the most beautiful buildings." This is a young guy telling me
Yeah.
this. "One of
Yeah.
the most beautiful buildings." He said that all the other schools I went to were not like that. And he said, the last thing he said to me, he said, Why did they stop it as a high school?" And I said, "You got a couple of hours for me to talk to you about that." So he said, "I would have loved to go into high school there." He said, that's what he said. So it's really crazy that we're in this situation that we're in with this and with the school systems, and we needed really to try to get back to, well, back to basics, as they used to say, back to basics. So, but I wanted to see how you felt about that. I'm going to ask one more question and then we're going to move on. So here it is. We have another race coming up. We know the candidates. We're surprised about the candidates, when you look at the dynamics involved with the candidates going against, with the candidates, especially the number one candidate going against you, and you look what they, I had to laugh when I saw what was going on, and I just said, "Okay, I don't understand. I'm a Womingtonian. I keep very, unlike Leonard, Leonard, I keep track of everything that goes on, that's going on up there." So I remember Leonard, I was the one that told you about it, right? When about, oh yeah, remember I said, "Do you know what they get ready to do up there?" Because Leonard, now unfortunately, I'm a squeal on this. We don't live in Wilmington now. We both live in Newark.
Right, but
We
you
both,
still care.
yeah, but I, I'm, I care. So,
Yeah, always.
it's very important, what's going on. And so I said, "Man, you see this craziness?" So we have to try to figure out And especially I'm hoping, because I had a lot of people that responded to, you know, seeing that you were going to be on the show and everything. People, we have to figure it out. We know what's going on. We have to take the time to look at all the things that we need to look at that are important. Now, one thing, I work in social services. I'm with the state of Delaware. So, you know, we have a lot of issues with homelessness. You mentioned it earlier. We have a lot of issues with, we have the Hope Center, but we need more buildings like the Hope Center to house people, indigenous people, people with mental issues, veterans who are not necessarily being taken care of as well. We need to try to find better homes and housing and better situations for them. Do you have in your platforms, you know, something that really pinpoints those people in trying to get them situated? Because we know Wilmington is dealing with a lot of that right now.
Yes. Yes. So, you said a lot.
It was on my heart.
It's good. So I'll speak a little bit to the first part of it, and that is kind of what's happening. What is this dynamic that has, and for people who may not know, has the governor of the state of Delaware, who was formerly a congressperson and lieutenant governor, but currently is the governor, stepping down, and if you count them, it's eight levels of government. It's eight levels of government to run for mayor of the city. There has been for such a long time in our state and also within the city. So in the state as a whole, including the city, a situation where people are less and less and less encouraged to participate in the election process and to understand and choose a leader in their interest. There's been such a process of a few handful of people kind of controlling and through different strategies, determining and dictating who would be in what position. And so this is that's an effort to kind of perpetuate that same historical approach. It's sort of a sense of entitlement. It's, I believe, a lot of power and control that, kind of drives people to want to continue and maintaining the status quo. So all the things that we have talked about that represent change that's needed, this is about not wanting to see those changes happen. And that third piece, when I said safe, smart, and empowered, that third piece is what people don't want to see happen. And that's why I said, for me, that's the most important thing, because if you get that, if you get people, this whole democracy at all levels, including here, if you get people engaged and involved and understanding and voting their interests and seeing that things can be different, that's power. And that's the kind of power that we need to have at work. And that's the kind of power that, unfortunately, in many cases, those who have been in power don't want to see happen. Yeah. And so I just really think in many ways, you know, that's what that's about. But, and so to those changes, those are absolutely things that I am working on now to try and see the building blocks that can be put in place so we can flush out like full plans around how we address particularly things like the mental health challenges that people have. There's been so much trauma, you know, in our city from the crime and so forth that affects people. People who've been incarcerated, that experience, when they come through on the back end of that, there's some readjustment and adapting that has to happen. The veterans that you mentioned, you know, in many cases, they need the benefit of some mental health support and other types of support. And, you know, we've got to begin to realize that an investment in helping people along early on, and I'm not one for, oh, just give away the store, hand out this, hand out that, but I am one for recognizing where help is needed and attending to that. Because on the back end, it pays such dividends. First of all, we help, you know, elevate someone's life. And then secondly, we help them become more productive, more self-sustainable. And don't we all want to see that? So there's a lot that we need to do in all those areas and put people to work. And so it's a lot.
Yeah.
But we got to get about doing it and putting those building blocks in place that can get us going and heading us in that direction.
Well, we need to put in place the people who are actually about the work instead of carrying on the work. Yes. If you know what I mean.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Absolutely. So, all right, folks, we've talked about a lot there. A lot was said, and I'm sure we can go on with this for hours because this is what this is all about. But we have to make sure that in November and leading up to November, we need to have our voices heard. We need to show up. We need to make sure that people hear about the things they need to hear about and stop getting tricked into saying, oh, look what we have here. Look what we have here. Look how pretty it is down at the waterfront and then at the riverfront. And, you know, we got the stadium now. We got this, you know. It's not all about those things. It's about exactly what we've been talking about on this show tonight.
Yes.
That's what it's about. And we need to wake up and we need to pay attention to everything. This is the young lady that's trying to get it done.
Right.
Okay.
I said, when you walk out your front door and you look to your left, you look to your right, you know, you walk down a block to your parked car to catch the bus. What do you experience when you do that? That's what we need to be attending to. You know, right there where people live and that, because that's where their lives are going to be changed. And then, as that gets better, you're working, your home is stable because you've been able to afford the housing you can live in. Then you can go down to the riverfront and have something to eat and enjoy it.
Right.
Well, you know, but we want people to, where they live, when they walk out their door, to feel a higher quality of life than they currently feel. And you're right, getting the right people in place who are going to be as much as possible at the heads of the table.
Yes.
is what's going to help us make that happen. And voting is the key. So I urge everyone to see the hope and the possibility in this. Because, for so long, and I get it, after so long, it's like, why bother? Nothing's going to change.
Right.
It can change. But it will only happen if you and you and you, if each person steps forward, steps up, and makes a choice that they believe is in their interest. And voting, David, you mentioned November. November, yes, is the general election, but we've got a primary election in
Right,
September.
right, right.
And so want to make sure people have that on their radar screen. September 10th is the
The
primary
primary,
election day,
right.
the Democratic
Yeah.
primary election. And I'm just so optimistic about the potential that I know exists all across the city when we have people living their best life,
Right.
which is what we want all
Yeah.
across the city, every zip code, living their best life.
Yeah, that's the way it used to be. We can get back there again. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so.
Yeah, now, Brother Dave didn't want to ask, but he has a personal question for you. Dave wanted to know if you could turn PS2 Pine back into a high school so he could claim.
Hey, look, let me tell you something, Leonard. If we had that power to do that, it'd be done.
It would be done.
Right.
It would be done. But I will say, we need a public high school in
Yeah,
this
we
city,
do.
and we
We
don't
do.
have one.
Yeah.
And that building is already conditioned for it. It's large enough. The facilities are there and still there to accommodate. So in terms of the facility itself, it would be turnkey.
Yep.
It would be
It's in immaculate
turnkey.
condition,
Yeah,
that building. Yeah.
and I was gonna say they have a swimming pool,
Yeah,
A
they got
swimming
everything there.
pool.
They got everything.
Yes. And the
Track, they got a
track has
track.
been well
They got everything.
maintained.
Yes.
So it really is a turnkey location. And
Yeah.
I would absolutely love to see that. And the mayor of the city and other leaders in the city, members of council, need to have a strong voice with the people of the city along with them, because that's where we get the power,
Right.
is with the people, together with the people of the city who want to see that happen, a high school here. Ideally, that would be a great place. But a public high school in this city, it can happen.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, there you have it, folks. There you have it. So, but what we're going to do right now, we're gonna get into our little topic section of our show, and Velda as graciously says she's gonna hang out with us. So we're gonna go into a couple of topics and talk about those, and then at the end we'll have her close out the show with her social media and how you can get in touch with her, those type of things. So all right, so we got a couple stories that we want to talk about and actually, Velda, get your input on as well. And this first story, I'm going to read a little bit about the story. It's called "To Protect Black Women and Save America from Itself, Elect Black Women." That's what this is about. It says 100 years ago, women finally gained the right to vote through the 19th Amendment, but it's taken much longer for women, specifically Black women, to be granted a seat at the cultural and political table of America. It says also that Shirley Chisholm, the first Black woman elected to Congress in 1968, and the first woman and African American to seek the nomination for President of the United States from one of the two major political parties in 1972, famously said, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair." I love that. I love that. A vanguard for women's political leadership, Chisholm tactfully pushed for inclusion throughout the political process. But as her quote suggests, because if conventional democratic processes fail, then you have to take matters into your own hands. Recently across the country, we have seen a new generation of Black political leaders do just that. While a legion of vital Black women voters push for long neglected reform, both Black women are still vastly underrepresented nationally among political candidates, making up only 2% of challengers to incumbents. If we truly want to create a more equitable America and solidify Black women's seat at the table, we must bring Chisholm's folding chair all the way to the White House with a Black woman who became vice president back in 2020. I'm going to stop right there. Now, a lot was said in that, what I just read. What's your thoughts on that, Belder? What do you think about the Black woman and her place in the political spectrum?
You know, I think particularly for the, when you talk about the two major parties, the Democratic Party, I mean, Black women have been loyal to the Democratic Party, period. You know, if you think back over the national elections when they talk about, you know, different groups of people, different demographics, suburban white women, or it'll vary depending on who's running and speculating about how that demographic will vote. But I don't think you ever hear that about Black women. Because I think the principles of the democracy are so, you know, so central to, I think, the way we approach things. You know, want things to be fair, want them to be equitable, want everybody to being very inclusive of people, very nurturing. Those kinds of things, I'd say typically. And so we've been involved, but just haven't been brought into the, you know, the ranks of elected office, and certainly not higher elected office. And so I think Madam Chisholm is totally right. I think, you know, that we got to stop. And I'm not saying that we were waiting for an invitation, but the invitation hasn't come. And so we just got to bring that folding chair and and just come on in and say, okay, I'm here. And be prepared to just stand up and kind of claim our space and our presence. And I'm so happy to see that happening more and more, because I think the perspective that we bring as Black women is different than, you know, so many other of the demographics. And I just honestly feel if we ever needed the kind of life experience that we as Black women typically have, if we've ever needed it, I believe we surely need it now.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true.
Yeah.
Leonard, you got any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And when Belda was talking about how Black women kind of mobilize the masses, it kind of made me think of like Stacey Abrams, how she was such a great motivator to bring so many people on board, but she kind of didn't get the support. I mean, she brought people to the party, but she didn't get the support she needed in the end. And I think it's one of those things where, we almost need to, well, I mean, definitely bring your own folding chair, your own table, your own food. But, I think that every year, I think politicians are just realizing the power of the Black woman, not just for voting, but also for leading. So, I mean, to be honest, I can't lie. I feel like this is going to be a, on the national level, I feel like it's going to be a little bit weird of a race, because, Donald Trump always throws in some little landmines. But, well, Bella, let me ask this. Do you feel the same way for, let's say, specifically the city of Wilmington? Do you believe Black women are kind of like an untapped, well, maybe not untapped, but the potential for them to kind of rally the masses is kind of similar to what how Stacey Abrams did in Georgia.
I believe so, because really, if you look at the the voting statistics, Black women are very strong in number in terms of the voting population here in the
Oh, wow.
city. And so you have to say, okay, that being the case, why are we, and look how far behind we are from other states like Georgia and some of the others. You have to say, like, okay, what is that? And I think it kind of harkens back to that dynamic that I mentioned earlier, and that we're seeing even in the opponent that I'm having. It's like just n not wanting to allow us to self govern and to lead. And but in reality, we need that so much more now than ever before. And so I think it's complicated, but at the end of the day, it comes down to what people, the decision they make to come out and vote, and for whom they choose to vote. And so Black women have the dual, if you're looking for inclusion, we check off two boxes. We're female, and we're African American, we're a person of color. But if you're not looking for inclusion and you're kind of looking for the status quo, then we would check off two boxes. So, you're less likely to kind of invite and see us as leaders. But when you take someone like myself with the resume that I have and the track record that I have, including in directly in managing within this city, it's kind of difficult to say, this leader isn't very capable and highly qualified. So it's a matter of us, of people, just kind of making the choice that, again, who they believe is going to move the city in the direction that's in their interest and the interest of our whole city collectively.
Well, I know you have used moved your folding chair around a lot. And matter of fact, you're sitting in it right now, and I know you're going to move it to the next spot in a few. So, I
Right.
mean,
Yeah, kind of
but
hard to look. I always said I don't go away easy.
there you
You
go, there
know,
you go, there you
when I'm
go.
on a mission to see some things happen, I don't give up on them easily at all. And I'm really passionate about this window of opportunity that is here and now.
Well, the timing is definitely important and is definitely right. And with the political landscape that's all over the country right now, and with the moves that are being made, this is a perfect storm. This is the perfect storm to ride right now. So let's see what happens. Yes. Let's see what happens. All right, we're going to go on to our next story. Go ahead, Leonard, with your story.
Yep. So our next story is talking about how a Virginia school board voted to restore the Confederate names of Confederate leaders to the school. So this happened in Shenandoah County, Virginia, and it happened last week, where there was a measure which passed 5-1, which reversed the previous board's decision in 2020 to change the names of schools that have been linked to famous Confederate slave owners, pro-slave owners that we're familiar with, such as Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Turner Ashby. And of course, those all reference to being pro-slavery during the Civil War. So with that said, Mountain View High School will go back to the name of Stonewall Jackson High School. Honey Run Elementary will go back to Ashby Lee Elementary. So basically what they're saying is the school board is currently saying that when they made the decision in 2020, that they kind of rushed to judgment. You know, they got caught up in the hype of, well, I'm sorry, not the hype, but they got caught up in the George Floyd movement, where a lot of people were demanding change. And they said that they didn't adequately poll the community to see if that's something the community wanted. Okay, so Dave, when I hear that, then I can already assume what that community is like.
But, yeah, we know what it looks like.
Yeah, but you know, there's also a strong conservative group that says that they believe reinstating the names of those pro-slavery individuals will honor their community's heritage and respect the wishes of the majority. So, you know, I mean, I think it's just amazing. You know, I'm assuming, and they didn't say it in the article, but I'm assuming it's a different board than the original board 4 years ago that first voted on it. So, I mean, you know, I just think it's interesting that how they're kind of going back. In the article that I was reading from NBC News, they said that there was one Black student that said if the name were restored, she would have to attend and respect the man that fought for her ancestors to be slaves. So, you know, I thought that was pretty deep. Velda, do you have any thoughts regarding the article?
You know, I
wait, say so much to say.
I would wonder how people on the school board, if they had something in their history that was oppressive, traumatic, some kind of experience that you know, that was very deep seated, and I wonder what they would want done if then they were faced with, you know, a public facility, one that they or their children, you know, are expected to go into every day. And like the young man who, David, who you mentioned, was proud that he was a PS DuPont, right? That you want to, you know, kind of take away with them that kind of a positive experience. I wonder how they would feel if they were in that kind of a situation. And why they can't, it seemingly can't put themselves mentally and emotionally in that place to see what it might be like, and if they wouldn't maybe come out of it with a different decision if they were able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, because one of the things that you are charged to do as a leader is just that. It's to step outside of just yourself and think about, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot, or, you know, to kind of try and empathize and understand. And so I just wonder, because it is shameful if children and people who are descendants of slaves and all that has gone with that, that is still with us. Are, you know, I mean, what happened with George Floyd was significant.
Right.
And I think the hope was that that did create a turning point for more and more of us in the country. So to hear that it's rolled back is heartbreaking, really.
Well, you know, one thing, and Dave, before you answer, one thing I was thinking about real quick is, so currently this day, slavery is illegal. And during that point, well, no, that wouldn't make sense. I was just trying to think of how could you approve the name of, you know, a pro-slavery person when slavery now is illegal, but you're going to have them represent the name of the school. But I mean, it's crazy.
You know, all I'm going to say, I mean, you guys said a lot there, but all I'm going to say is that the new board must look like the old board. You know what I'm saying? That made those, that put those names on those schools. You know, it's really a shame that they feel that it's okay, because now with them doing something like that, is all of a sudden we're going to see all start to see, because it's been hinted around that they're going to start pulling these statues back out again.
Oh my God.
Of all the people that they, you know, the statues they put away, people like Robert E. Lee and, you know, other people, and pull them back out and start placing them back up again. Because once you start doing things like this and changing names of schools back, if I had a kid there, I would pull my kid out of the school personally. I really would. Because that just tells you that the values aren't strong enough, aren't as strong as they need to be. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's all I'm going to say about that. You know, that kind of upsets me a little bit, but that's a whole nother story. So,
yeah, you know, I think we need to really consider what we want to honor. It's not erasing history to not have, you know, a school and so forth. That history is, and it always will be. I mean, that was
that's right.
What it was. But what do we want to, like, as you say, what do we want? What do we value, and what do we want to honor, and what do we want our children, to, what do we want them to honor and to value? And we should just always be looking at to bring out the best in what we want ourselves to be. That doesn't do that.
No, not at all. Not at all. Oh, anyway, enough about that.
Hey, Velda, if Dave was over there, you know, Dave would be looking for that Martin Luther King High School, Malcolm X High.
Yes.
Anyway, our last story that we're going to talk about tonight, in reference to stories or concern or topics, course, unfortunately, over the weekend we had a tragedy that happened with up at the Concord Mall. For those of you who are that are listening outside of our area, there was a mall in North Wilmington that that's called the Concord Mall, that they had a carnival going on up there in the parking lot, and a bunch of youths, teenagers, got into a little dispute, well, a big dispute, and a couple teenagers got shot. Unfortunately, a 16-year-old died, and 17-year-old is in critical condition. It's really sad. And especially when you think about it, because, I came up, Velda came up, Leonard, you too. We all came up where festivals were always popular. We have some of the best, like you said earlier, Leonard, some of the best festivals around in Wilmington. When you think about, the Greek festival, the Italian festival, you think about all these festivals that have been around forever, you have a carnival and so forth up there at the Concord Mall, and this was the very first night of the carnival, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah. And these two groups of group of youths get into this feud, and the next thing there's a couple of fights, and people shooting. I mean, coming into the political, bringing it back to the political landscape, and our prayers go out to both families of these young men, and they're still looking for the shooter or shooters that may have been involved. Coming into the political, bringing it back to the political landscape, how do we, because now they're talking about, because a lot of the, and not only did it happen here in Delaware, but it also happened in PA and a couple other places. They had issues with carnivals, and shootings and so forth. Now they're talking about shutting down a lot of the carnivals for the summer. And this is something that's always been looked forward to every year. But now, is it safe to go out to these things? How do we police these things better? How do we monitor this better? Velda, what's your thoughts on that?
It is so heartbreaking, and if it would be heartbreaking under any circumstances, if it was a rare kind of occurrence, but even more devastating is that it's not rare. Like there was a 19-year-old shot and killed in the South Bridge area of our city just last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's gotten to where it's like it's not considered the heinous kind of situation that it should be, and therefore getting the kind of attention from our leaders that it ought to be getting. When our young people are succumbing to this violence the way that they are. I was out yesterday evening just visiting East Lawn Avenue, 30 East 35th Street neighborhood, and one of the ladies, when I knocked on the door, I was talking to her, and I often will ask, what would you like to see done differently? To not always be the one talking, but to hear. And she started talking about things different for young people. And she shared that she had lost her son to gun violence right down the street from where she lived. And she started tearing up and came to tears. And that's just happening far too much. So I get back to, we've got to do so much more on the front end of this, so that our young people are making different choices because they, you know, we've got to understand what is going on with them that is leading to them making these choices. And we're just not putting, I don't see us putting the work into doing that. You know, where there are gang type activities and so forth, there are things that can be done around youth violence intervention and have people like on the street who can know and hear what's going on and try to, you know, try to intercept the kind of behavior that would lead to this. But I don't see enough happening at all. And I think we gotta get this on the front end, because the back end is too late.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
It's too
definitely.
Late. Yeah, so we either get it on the front end or it's done. And you really have to have leaders who care about this.
And that's the most important thing, because
yeah, it is.
Yeah, because right now it seems like they only care about certain things.
Yeah, you got to care about this, and I don't believe we have the kind of passionate care for not seeing this happen, but to see that the lady stand in her doorway and brought to tears from, you know, a conversation that I'm knocking on doors, introducing myself, you know, meeting neighbors. It really brought home, you know, what people are living with.
Right.
And in this kind of situation.
Yeah. It's sad. It really is. Look. I grew up in Riverside. You know about Riverside.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, me too.
So remember, everybody used to say Riverside is a bad place. Nobody wanted to live over in Riverside. Look, some of the best people in the world came from Riverside. When you ask Riverside to stand up in a lot of venues, I never forget. I went to a funeral and the person was from Riverside that passed away. They asked. The pastor said, if you're from Riverside, stand up. 80% of the church stood up. Okay. That's the type of community I grew up in. Okay. Yeah. And even to this day, we recognize each other.
Mm-hmm.
We speak to each other. We, you know, so forth and so forth. Unfortunately, we've gotten away from that. And we don't have that same village mentality that we used to have before, you knew your neighbors, you knew everybody, I don't know my neighbors. I'm being honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't, but I know if I see somebody from Riverside or somebody I came up with, I
right.
know them.
Right.
And they know me.
Right.
So,
right.
so. We have to get back to that, and hopefully with the right leadership, like the young lady we're talking to right now, we can get back to that. Okay. All right. We're done with our topics. I'm just going to leave you. We're going to go into Leonard's favorite part of the show, which is he hates to admit it, by the way, Belda. He hates to admit this, but because I always challenge him with this particular part of the show, which is Dave's Corner, and always throw a philosophical question out there at him or something, make him think and make him work a little hard. But he don't want to, most of the time he don't want to do it, but I make him do it anyway. But today I'm going to do something different, and I'm just going to end it, since we've been talking about a lot of deep stuff, and we're going to end it with just some stuff that makes you smile and laugh a little bit. So today's Dave's Corner goes like this. Remember back in the day, Arsenio used to say things that make you go, okay. So I'm just going to read off a couple things that make you think a little bit. And also, you probably heard of some of these things all your life, and you say, okay, why did that make sense? So, okay, here we go. Why don't you ever see headline Psychic Wins Lottery? You would think some psychic would have won a lottery by now, right?
You would think.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, here's another one. Why get even when you can get odd? So.
Hold on, Dave. I'm glad to say that for one of my dad jokes for the kids. Okay.
Okay, here's another one. Why is abbreviated such a long word?
That's cute.
That make you go, okay, all right. Okay. Why is a boxing ring square? Yeah, I know. That doesn't make any sense, right? Okay, here's another one.
Could be
Why?
circular.
It could be circular, right? Yeah.
But they're not, I
Yeah,
don't know.
I like this one coming up. Why is a person who plays the piano called a pianist, but a person who drives a race car not called a racist? Okay. Why is brassiere singular and panties plural? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't. Not at all. Okay. Why is it called lipstick if you can still move your lips? I thought that was funny.
Velda, now you see why this part of the show I just be like.
Okay. Anyway, just calm down. Okay. Why is it that doctors call what they do practice? I'd be scared. If you think about it, you should be scared to go to one if they call it practice. Okay. Why is it that night falls, but day breaks? That's a good one right there. Why is it that raindrops? Oh no! Why is it that rain drops, but snow falls? Things that make you go home, folks. Things that make you go home. Okay, why is it that you must wait until night to call it a day? Why is it the time of day with the slowest traffic called rush hour? Because you're stuck in traffic all that time, right? Yeah. Why do we say a pair of pants when there is only one article of clothing? Then it's not a pair. It's not like you get two pants, you only get one. Why do you wash? Oh, okay. This is good. Why do we wash bath towels? Aren't we already clean? When we use them.
Leonard is like,
So,
I'm used to him. I'm used to him doing it. I'm used to him.
This is what I have to put up with every week.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anyway,
They gotta shake my head.
calm down. I got a few more. I got a few
Okay.
more. Okay. Why do wise guys like Leonard and wise men mean entirely different things? Yeah. Okay. Why do your feet smell and your nose runs? Get it? Why do your feet smell and your nose run? Okay. Y'all didn't get that
I got
one.
it after you said it the second time. I got it.
Here's another good one. Why do you need an appointment to see a psychic Don't they know you're coming already? Why do we call them restrooms when there's no one goes in there to rest? Okay, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. Okay, that was the last
Ooh,
one. So they could make you go.
that was rough, Dave.
They're actually cute to me
There
because,
were some good ones there. There
yeah.
was some good ones
there. Yeah.
Leonard is like,
He's such a hater. He's such a hater. He's such a hater. But anyway, so this is where we give you a chance to talk about your social media pages or how people can get in contact with you and say your last little let's get them speech, or you're
Okay.
going to use your folding chair on them. Okay, good.
Okay. Well, I thank you both so much for, having me on and giving me the opportunity to talk with you. I've really enjoyed this
Okay.
a great deal, and I appreciate it. Appreciate the time. And as I we're saying now, we're kind of on we're nearing the home stretch. September 10th is the election day. And we're out working, trying to get our message out about Wilmington becoming a place that's safe, smart, and empowered. And I'm hopeful that people who have not seen themselves or felt a part of this city will be inspired to see that this is a city for everybody who lives in Wilmington, no matter what zip code you're in. And we're stronger together across this whole city. And as we create opportunity for everyone to be a part of the progress that lifts our city as a whole. I welcome support. People can reach me and see more about what I'm doing and what I'm all about in my quest for mayor on my website at veldaformayor.com. And we're always looking for volunteers and financial support to help with the campaign, helps us get our message out, to everyone. And then we have a campaign phone that if anyone needs assistance from a voter services standpoint, you're not sure where you need to, how you register or if you're registered. We have people who can help you take a look at that. And the phone number for our campaign office is the area code 302 545 4031. And again, you can always reach us from our website, veldaformayor.com.
Leonard, did you get the phone number as well?
Okay, can you say it one more time and I'll put it in
Yeah,
the
we'll put it on.
notes?
Yeah, right. There we
It's
go.
area code 302 545 4031.
And veldaformayor.com,
Dot
right?
com.
Yeah,
Yep.
okay.
Yes.
All right, great, great, great. We've really, really appreciated you taking the time to come and hang out with us. We're hoping that, this reaches a lot of people, and falls into maybe someone's hand that probably maybe was on the fence, but maybe now know what way and what direction to go. Okay. And hopefully they'll be able to tell some friends of theirs. Okay. So, with that being said, we really look forward to doing our thing in September and making it happen and showing it's not always about money. It's not always about the glitz and the glamour. It's about what people are going to do and how they're going to help you and how they're going to empower you and how they're going to help you to be
recognized and heard. Mm-hmm. And we need people like you to do that. Okay, so we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yeah. All right. And Leonard, you got anything you want to add before we close out?
Belda, I also just want to thank you for coming on the show. I think it was very insightful. You know, some of the things, especially, you know, as giving opportunities to the youth, the arts and culture. I feel like those are two things I hear about a lot. So, you know, I'm excited to see what your plans will be, you know, once becoming mayor.
Thank you. I'm really excited about where I see Wilmington going with leadership, one that cares,
right,
and two that's willing to, you know, make some bold changes to create opportunities like that.
Right. And I always love to say, because, you know, Dave don't like to brag on himself, but, you know, when we talk about arts and culture, if you need any singers, you know, Dave loves to tell everybody I sing.
Yeah. That's what he loves to tell everybody.
Dave doesn't like to toot his own horn. So I just, you know, if you're looking for
I don't talk much, huh? Yeah, I talk all the time. That's right. Yeah. So, but anyway, don't pay attention to him. Don't listen to him. Anyway, but yeah, thank you again. And speaking of that, let me just say this real quick. I know we have the new amphitheater down in Wilmington, okay, that has, you know, but, you know, is that really for us? You know what I'm saying? You know, because there's a lot of local, and we have so many musicians here in Delaware, you know, and I work closely with a lot of musicians and so forth myself. And, you know, especially with the Jazz Festival, I still, you know, it's great of a function as that's always been. It's still, we don't seem to see enough of our local people in it. Oh. And hopefully that gets to change with the, if we can get the old regime out and get the new one in.
Yep. So,
okay. All right. All right, guys. We want to thank you for taking the time to listen to us tonight. And we'll be tuning in. Make sure you tune in with us next week as we come back again and hit you up with news and trends with Dave and Len. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Join us next week for another edition of News and Trends with your hosts, Dave and Len.